heute das Morgen verstehen.
If you have the machine which grants you your wish, then you must pay attention to the old fairy tale of the three wishes, which tells you that if you do make a wish which is likely to be granted, you'd better be very sure that it is what you want and not what you think you want.
If you have a machine that grants your wish, you better be sure about your wishes, said the mathematician and philosopher Norbert Wiener, the founder of cybernetics, in a lecture in 1950. Cybernetics can be described as the science of the regulation and control of machines or systems. The central question is the analogy of machines and systems to the way social organizations and living organisms act. Looking at today, never in history have we humans been more intertwined with machines, which gives technology a huge influence on human behavior. But is there a way to use this influence for good? Today, we want to talk about an approach that promises to do exactly that, which Norbert Wiener would undoubtedly have found highly fascinating. The goal of so-called algorithmic nudging is to trigger positive behavioral changes without coercion, but with the help of algorithms. In this episode, we want to discuss how algorithmic nudging can be used positively, whether the technology could also help to achieve a more sustainable way of life, and where is the line between motivation and manipulation. We are Miriam
and Lea.
What might the future look like if we find a way to design sustainable, accountable technology? How can they be institutionalized within leading corporations? Morals and Machines brings creative thinkers and pioneering scientists together with experts in politics, business, and society to sketch out a futuristic vision of how humans and machines can coexist. Among others, Tina Müller, CEO of the Douglas Group, writer Evgeny Muratov, Professor of Psychology at the University of Texas at Austin, Catherine Page Harden, Viola Amherd, Federal Counselor and Head of the Federal Department of Defense, Switzerland, and Markus Haas, CEO of Telefonica Deutschland, will be discussing these topics with us. Tickets for virtual or on-site participation at the K21 in Dusseldorf, as well as further information, are available at www.morals-machines.com.
Yeah, and before we get into the digital realm, we might want to take a closer look where the term actually comes from. And the term nudging originates from a famous book from the year 2008. You might have heard about it. You might have even read it. It's the book Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth and Happiness. And that book was written by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein, both very well-known scholars. Sunstein is a legal scholar. Taylor is a behavioral economist, and you might remember that he received the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2017 for everything he did about combining psychology and economics. And they explain a nudge in their book as any aspect of the choice architecture that alters people's behavior in a predictable way without forbidding any options or significantly changing their economic incentives. Means, Leia talked about manipulation, that is not what nudging is about. It's about like really triggering some behavior in people without coercion, without really excluding options. So the people are supposed to come up themselves with the wish to behave in that way because they're nudged in that direction.
And what's really important to understand first, I think, is what Thaler and Sunstein describe as the choice architecture. So you can think about this as the basic architecture or infrastructure around you that influences your choices, actually. And it does so whether some entity or agent means to influence your choice or not. So let me give you one example that is used in the book also, that is very obvious, and we can also obviously see who the agent here is. So in a supermarket, when we're all in line, at the very end of the line, we all know what kinds of products are at the very end, right? It's chocolate. It's chocolate, it's chewing gums, it's sweet stuff, it's cigarettes. It's basically stuff that you could argue is generally not very healthy for us, but supermarkets have designed the choice architecture in a way where they want you, while waiting, want you to have a last little nudge. You know, don't you want some sweet stuff? Don't you feel like a cigarette? You could think about, this is something Thaler and Sunstein argue, you could think about putting apples at the very end of that supermarket experience. While you're waiting in line, why not nudge people to have something healthy, like fruit? So again, it's very important to understand that no matter how the architecture is constructed, it is always a choice architecture. We are always influenced or nudged in some kind of way. The question is if we can influence it in a little bit more of a positive way. So nudges are therefore called choice architecture interventions. We intervene the architecture, intervene in the system set up around us to somehow nudge people in hopefully more positive way. And in a way, of course, some of you might say, well, Thaler and Sunstein have just given a name to a phenomenon that really has been around for centuries, of course, right? Because in a broader sense, any kind of warnings or hints or even marketing actions can, of course, be understood as nudges. But with this term, they again gave a name to something that we can maybe influence more consciously and more proactively.
And this is all related to something you, again, also might have heard about, because Daniel Kahneman wrote a famous book about it, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's about how our brain works, how our consciousness is connected to our brain, and which mechanisms, like default mechanisms on the one hand side, get to work there and to influence our behavior, and where we really start to reflect on things. So the behavioral economic approach of Thaler and Sunstein is something a little bit different from what conventional economy really offers us as an explanation. As human beings being rational economic actors, we all know, I think, that this is not, at least not always, true. And so they relate to the different two systems in the human brain. System one as a more unconscious, automatic and fast decision making, where we don't have to think about what we do a lot or in a long time frame. And the second system is the more conscious, deliberating, and more time consuming decision making. The first one is maybe about 80% of decisions we do. Like if you enter a restaurant in the morning and you have a breakfast buffet, if you to really decide from scratch what you would like to go for, it would take ages. So there are a lot of default mechanisms that come into place, and this is the system one with about 80% of our decision making. And the system two, the more conscious, deliberate, and time-consuming decisions get into place, where we really start to think about things that are important. And that is where the nudges come in, and where people are supposed to be triggered into making these decisions by integrating different options that they are nudged into, and hopefully allow for a better, whatever we call that, better behavior, a different behavior, a more conscious behavior in terms of our environmental behavior, in terms of how we feed ourselves, how we interact with other people, and all these kinds of things. So maybe, Leia, we want to discuss a couple of examples where nudges come into place in our real life economy, our real life decision making, to make clear what this means.
Yes. So before we move into algorithmic nudging and some examples on that, let's again look at some more, other than the one I gave from the supermarket, some more nudges that actually do push or suggest to people, push people into the direction of behaving potentially in a healthier way. So for example, there was a German study from last year that found that nudges significantly increased the willingness to disinfect hands during the corona pandemic, even doubling it when two different nudges were combined. So we've all seen, this might not be, you know, clear as a nudge to you, but we've all seen the disinfectant dispensers in public spaces, and something like the dispenser being present plus a sign reminding you to disinfect your hand, as well as some footprints on the floor leading to the dispenser. So you have the actual device, you have a sign reminding you of it, and you have a way to, you know, lead you to it. Those three nudges together actually increase the willingness to disinfect your hands. This is basically a nudge, because you could also disinfect your hands by yourself. You could have had the, you know, the disinfectant with you, but this is a public nudge to make sure that you engage in this behavior. We have something like the nutritional traffic lights, you know, those green, red, and yellow signs on, sometimes there's orange in it as well, those traffic lights on food, on various foods, to indicate how healthy it is and to motivate people to basically eat healthier.
One example I really like is how to maybe get people to behave a little bit more in accordance to requirements by environmental issues we are facing. For example, what Copenhagen does with the bike infrastructure, you have the bike lanes cleared first in winter so that bikes can go while the cars have to wait, and also like green waves for bicycle riders all over the city. You also have a little infrastructure where you can refill your tires, where you get immediate air pumped into your tires. All those kinds of things are little nudges that allow for bicycles to really become very, very favorable in Copenhagen. And that is an example where you see that we could tie nudges into broader schemes of really trying to change societal behavior in realms where it's really, really important to initiate those changes.
And what I find interesting is that governments have been thinking about this for quite some time now, also on a much bigger sort of national level. For example, the government of Estonia is now considering what they call proactive government services. So, for example, you could automate certain things to make sure that for example, people who would like to donate their organs but completely do not have it on their radar to go to the agency and let them know that they are willing to donate their organs in the case of death, they could automate this so that the default would be that everybody donates their organ, and that you have to actively opt out if you do not want it. Because again, studies have shown that if the default option is something that many people actually, when asked, would like to choose, but simply forget or do not know that they even have to say actively, then this default option actually really helps in nudging people into that direction. So as I just mentioned, it's been a trend for the last few years now to also do this kind of nudging at the government level. In fact, there have been many behavioral insights units, which is what the British government has called theirs. These units are there to basically integrate these behavioral economic insights into policy making. So the behavioral insights team of the British government, the BIT, has been around for 10 years now, and they actually were transferred last year into becoming this independent foundation. We can see that these units are popping up all over the place.
So you see that there are many, many examples, proven examples that nudges work in our real world, in our physical world. But today we, of course, want to take a closer look at how algorithmic nudges can work, digital choice architectures, like Leia explained before. And that means we want to figure out what happens if we apply the concept of nudging to the digital infrastructure that we are using every day. And of course, we do. Like in our smartphones, in these little devices, there are many, many nudges you come across almost every minute, and we are not aware of that. So it might be helpful to talk about that, because sometimes it's a way of nudging that goes in a direction where you could describe it as manipulation, of course, by really triggering people into addictive behavior, to put it very bluntly. On the other hand, of course, we can use these algorithmic nudges also to change our behavior and intertwine it with how we behave in the real world, especially, for example, again, regarding environmental issues we have to tackle. So let's dive into that a little bit deeper. And for that, we talked to someone who is really interesting. She researches a lot about algorithmic nudges. And her name is Mareike Mühlmann. She is an assistant professor in the Department of Information and Process Management at Bentley University and researches the logic and the topic of digital platforms using digital technologies and also, of course, using nudges. And maybe we listen to her to start off this conversation or this part of the conversation on algorithmic nudges.
I think that algorithmic nudging is different. And I would say it's more powerful. So platform companies or companies in general, they are increasingly using digital technologies such as algorithms to manage and control individuals. And what they are doing is that they are not managing or using these technologies to manage and control them by force, but rather by nudging them into desirable behavior. That means that they learn from their personalized data and that they alter their choices in a subtle way.
So to summarize, Mareike Mühlmann basically argues that algorithmic nudges are even more powerful, right? Because basically it's a combination of large amounts of data being able to be collected and analyzed, then that being used to personalize even these nudges, to even adapt them in real time, and also to predict the necessity of nudges, meaning if you can see online, if you can watch people react to your nudges, you can gauge much better when you need to, even what time of the day you need to basically produce them again and again, or whether they are working in real time, which is something that oftentimes you can't really do in a much bigger choice architecture situation. So it does sound very powerful. I mean, might also sound kind of basic, you know, to think about what these digital technologies are pushing us to do. But in fact, it is not all that basic. It's actually very powerful and comes with a lot of responsibility that these platforms hold. I mean, we've talked about the larger examples, you know, Facebook nudging us to engage in a lot of kind of sensationalist content and a lot of polarizing content. But this can also go down to the very, very personal day-to-day life. I mean, Miriam, do you have any nudges on your phone, actually, not on platforms, but rather on apps that remind you to do certain things every day, for example?
Yes. For example, I have an app on my phone that reminds me to drink water regularly because I regularly forget about that. So a notification pops up and tells me it's time to drink a glass of water. And that happens like once once an hour. And at the beginning, I found it quite disturbing, I have to admit. But actually, it made me think of drinking water and then also doing it, actually. And I've used that for a couple of months now. And now this regular drinking a glass of water has turned into a habit. And I don't even need the nudges anymore. So I have to admit that worked quite well. And in this regard, I also think it was a good change of behavior, because now I'm just used to the ritual of regularly taking a glass of water and drinking it.
So I recently got my first Apple Watch, and I did not know that it would remind me by vibration every hour to stand up, because basically we're all sitting a whole lot, right? And it is kind of interesting, because we've all heard that sitting is the new smoking. It's incredibly, you know, unhealthy to do that for hours every day. And I have to admit, I wasn't aware just of, first of all, how many hours without getting up, how many hours I was sitting for. And though I was kind of annoyed by the frequency of the reminder, I agree with you on the fact that it basically lodges the knowledge very deeply in your awareness. And then, you know, it usually leads you at some point, hopefully, when the tipping point comes, it triggers you to actually engage in the behavior. Let's look at some more nudges on larger digital, on the larger digital infrastructure around us. We have, for example, you know, personalized nudges to come up with a stronger password. Even the little sign saying, actually, you know, you've used this 37 times and it's very simple, it's your birth date, do not do this. Even little reminders like that, or payment apps that allow you by default to leave a tip, that even suggest a tip to you. I know the taxi app that I use basically has a default tip for all the drivers, which I like because I don't want to forget not to tip them unless, you know, it was a horrible drive, in which case I might consider it. But I like here the nudge to pay people according to their service. Or you just mentioned, Miriam, many health applications are currently suggesting, you know, either a certain diet for people or nutritional advice or drinking water. We have this all around us, all these little digital nudges.
Another example that is interesting, I have an account with Bank of America from the time I lived in the US, and what they do to nudge people into saving some money and raising the awareness of how important it is not to spend everything all at once. Whenever you make a transaction or you pay with a credit card, they ask you by default, keep the change. So the change will just be kept and put back into your savings account, or sometimes they have like some period of time where they donate the change then to some social organization or things like that. Everything about this is about nudging. So we are nudged into things every second of our life in a way.
Let's move into the question of whether these nudges are definitely always good, because we've mentioned now multiple times, of course, there are also certainly many, many examples of digital platforms basically nudging us in a nutshell to stay longer on their platform or to even use their service. One example is that Uber sometimes shows you little icons, or at least they used to. This, you know, many experts and researchers have found that they used to show you icons of little cars moving closer to you than there were actually drivers available, so that you would think or be led to think that the car would likely be there faster. And then you would, you know, use their service and realize then that it actually takes a lot more minutes for the car to get there. So this is just a tiny example. Many others that nudge us to either stay for longer or, you know, buy more products. And I want to hear from Mareike Mühlmann again about whether nudges can really be only, you know, a way to change people's behavior for good, or especially even to live in a more eco-friendly way.
You know, when we think about using algorithmic nudges for good, I think we're still at the beginning. But think about social media, for example, to United Nations organizations, nonprofits, and so on have been using social media for a long time to get their message out there. If you think about more sophisticated approaches, such as personalized real-time reminders that are sent to individuals in order to make them behave in certain ways, you know, you can think about reminders sent to an Apple Watch, for instance, then more has to be done to really implement that. So we see these kind of approaches when it comes to weight loss, for instance. And we've also see that there are a lot of climate change apps, so to say, out there. But at this point in time, they often solely provide information, for instance, about a carbon footprint. But algorithmic nudging would really put this to the next level, where you would really use data from an individual, personalized data, adjusted in real time to a specific situation in order to really nudge an individual to behave in certain ways. So I think it's possible, and discussion focus on these topics have started, but we need to see more.
Well, we need to see more, like Mareike Mühlmann says, and she emphasized that algorithmic nudging apparently puts the whole thing at the next level, because it's totally personalized, and the technical opportunities we have using our devices, using digital platforms to send out personalized nudges, really takes it to a next level. So if we stick with the example of Uber that Leah mentioned before, There is another example where we could figure out how difficult it is to really make a decision whether it's like nudging people into better behavior or if it's kind of a manipulative approach that really, also kind of takes people hostage of their own desires by pushing them further. Uber implemented a function for some time where they nudged drivers into working more and more because the drivers got personalized messages where it said, two more rides and then you will have made like so many dollars this day, or different kinds of messages that really pushed the drivers to work more and more. Is this a good thing? Well, depends on your perspective, and we could question that, we could debate that, for example. Another example is sticking to the realm of health improvement. If you think of yourself, and I assume a couple of you use Apple Watches, like Leia said, or wristbands or rings or whatever, devices that tell you how you behave, whether you behave in a healthy or not that healthy way. And that is, first of all, perceived as good. I would also say so. And I'm also using such a device. But in a way, we, of course, include the mechanisms and the principal approach of nudging into our own life by integrating the nudging system into how we approach reality. We don't even need like really external nudges, because we get totally addicted to the information and the calibration we are offered by these devices all the time. And this is an example where this system of nudging people on the one hand side really changes whole realms of behavior in life, where we could think, don't we then kind of interfere with personal freedom in doing so, in letting people integrate these systems of nudges into their own approach of living in a way that is, well, rather holistic.
I mean, the question of free will or autonomy, human autonomy, is of course very central also to the work, just to bring it back to them, of Cass Sunstein and Richard Thaler. They call their approach libertarian paternalism. The paternalism tells you that it definitely has something to do with having a sort of suggestive nature here. We can definitely debate whether that still has anything to do with real autonomy when we are so at least influenced, to say the very least, in our choice architecture. But maybe just to give you some more context, so there are many ways of nudging, there are many types of nudging, and actually the Technical University at Munich, in a recent study, found that there are likely seven ways, potentially there are more, but they found seven ways of digitally nudging positive behavior. Again, also negative, but these are seven ways that you might want to keep in mind. So number one, we have, and I'll go into examples in a second, but we have priming, we have decoy or deception, we have goal setting, defaults, feedback, social comparison, and framing. So let me just give you one example that I also remember from Sunstein and Thaler's book, social comparison. It actually really has a huge influence on us, how we compare to others. So for example, they did a study where they told people by letter, they sent out letters to hundreds, if not thousands, of American households, telling people how they compared in their energy consumption, how they compared to the people on their street. So for example, they said, you know, quite frankly, you are, you know, 50% worse. You consume way more energy than everybody else on your street, just so you know for next year. And this sort of, first of all, the framing of it, but also the social comparison of somebody holding a letter, so knowing that somebody else noticed this about their behavior and being compared to their neighbors on their street, actually had an influence on people. Because of course, you know, we do want to adhere to social norms, we want to be liked, we want to be thought of as a certain identity. And what's interesting though in the study at the Technical University of Munich is that it really matters when these nudges actually occur. So apparently nudges before the action of somebody. So for example, like goal setting, set yourself a goal of reaching this, are not as effective as the nudges that occur after the action. So for example, feedback or social comparison, telling somebody afterwards, you actually performed much worse than your peers. It has a bigger effect on how you will behave in the future. So I thought that that distinction was interesting, and also just the different kinds of, you know, of ways of going about this.
And you can imagine that these kinds of nudging, especially regarding the social comparison, has a lot to do with the public opinion climate we are facing in the respective times we are living in. So the example that just came to my mind thinking about it was this discussion about flight shame and German Flugscham that came up in the course of the debate about climate change and the learning during the pandemic that we actually could do without flying every day from here to there. And this is, of course, also related to nudges, where people say, I'm not going to fly anymore because it's really not good for the environment, and I'm going to take the train from now on. And the more people say that, the more pressure, of course, occurs. So we have something where we have a combination or a connection between personal individualized nudges and the whole public debate, the whole public opinion climate, where things go together. And the more they do, the better these nudges probably work. And of course, we can say in some regards, it could be really, really helpful, especially regarding environmental protection, to use those nudges. And there are a couple of examples where technology allows us to do so. So one example is GPS navigation. If you look up how to get best from here from point A to point B, we could not only show the fastest or the shortest route, but also the one that drains least energy. And there is actually already something like that on Google Maps. There's a Google Map feature for that. If you don't know that, check it out. You can really choose the route that saves the most energy. And that is, of course, a good thing regarding the problems we are tackling, or we even have to tackle, with climate change and environmental impact. Also, while traveling, whenever we choose something, we could always highlight the environmentally friendliest route, the friendliest flight we could take, that we could choose then to have at least a lower impact on the environment than we would have otherwise. Nutrition, also an example, again, food choices in online grocery stores. If you put the local stuff first, and consumers, customers, then they are triggered into buying those and not buying the strawberries that have been flown 10,000s of kilometers to arrive in December at a supermarket in Germany or in Switzerland or wherever we don't have strawberries at that point of time. And of course, also the example of energy use. We have all heard about smart metering. These smart meters collecting individual data, and the example Leia just gave you from the book of Thaler and Sunstein, you could use that in many ways, where you compare usage data in neighborhoods of people where you will not feel good when you're told you're actually the worst energy consumer in your whole neighborhood. That might make a difference, and you might want to make a change to your behavior then.
Let's finally think about the sort of line between ethical and unethical uses of this kind of nudging. Can organizations really take advantage of these strategic choices and nudges in a good way while acting ethically? And again, we have Mareike Mühlmann, who has some thoughts on the conditions under which these nudges really actually are used ethically.
I believe that in theory, we can think about creating nudges in a way that create a win-win situation, which means that they equally serve the interests of the workers, of the consumers, and of the platform. Just think about one specific example. Think about security, for instance. So workers, for instance, may get personalized messages or reminders on their Apple Watch to watch out for certain chemicals. So really personalized nudges based on a certain location they're in, for instance, can also be used for good in case a win-win situation is being created. Apart from that, we also need to think more about the technology at hand. So if you think about algorithmic nudging, as mentioned earlier, large amounts of data being collected, algorithms are used to find patterns in the data and then expose individuals to personalized real-time cues, right, to make them behave in certain ways. So that obviously then means that in order to handle the situation ethically, companies really need to explain the algorithm's logic and to share very detailed information about what data they're actually collecting, how they store this data, and what they do with this data. And generally, I would say that the GDPR, the European Data Protection Law, is a good starting point here, but more has to be done.
So according to Mareike Müllmann, algorithmic nudges don't have to be unethical as long as organizations actually create a win-win situation for all stakeholders. So they share information about data collection and storage and really explain the logic of the algorithms they use. So today we discussed the potential of small nudges for better collective behavior. And we discovered, while a common misconception to individual pro-environmental behavior is that as a single person, you actually can't make a difference, in fact, digital nudges have the potential to really change that by combining the personal and the collective perspective. Because the more you can orchestrate these kind of nudges, the more you can create a collective adjustment in behavior and really have an impact. And at the same time, this digital form of influencing human behavior must, of course, meet very high standards. We talked about regulations and about transparency and accountability. So to come back to the opening quote of Norbert Wiener, if you have a machine that grants a wish, you better be sure about your wish.
Ada. Heute das Morgen verstehen.